Thanks for listening and for being a part of Jason Q's Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program, the show that is going to take on all comers and is unafraid to speak out on anything. And tonight we are going to continue in the challenge as we bring in the big guns. And what I mean by that is that I'm going to introduce you into the campaign structure itself, and we're going to dissect what happened in the election of 2022 from the perspective of national and local perspectives. One of the best things that happens when you are involved in politics is the ability to go out and introduce yourself into the real world and the people that you meet along the way. Today, I was out collecting signs around the electorate from people who have stored them for me, called into a service station, and who should I run into but one of the people that I was handing out with at Curry Curry the other day, who happened to be handing out for a different party. And we sat there and we spoke for about 5 or 6 minutes about all sorts of things and realized how much we actually do have in common. And that part that we have in common is our want to make for a better community. So party politics aside, people are in it for the same reasons, and that is the reason to improve the world that we live in. So it's a nice way to go about the world of making change. Unfortunately, change is a little bit, well, slow, to say the least. And from there, we want to be able to do a whole lot more. We're watching the news around the world today, and we're seeing people being slaughtered literally in Texas and trying to come to terms with yet another killing, with yet another 18-year-old person that the FBI apparently had no way of determining that this person was a loose cannon. And so we wait and watch again, as we do, to find out what the end result will be. And that will be, of course, to once again take away the guns from Americans, because that's how it works without any regard to anything else. The FBI now is caught up in another situation in the Michael Sussman trial, because it had two sources of information there whereby it knew that the investigation it was launching into Donald Trump, well, actually, it knew all along that it did come from the Michael Sussman component. And Sussman, as it turns out, did send some information to the FBI as he had gone down and purchased USBs from Staples and then given that to the Clinton campaign to pay for. So Sussman, when he says he wasn't linked to the Clinton campaign, unfortunately, John Durham's holding the receipts, and he was. So here you've got a lawyer working for the Clintons, lying to the court, lying to the people and pleading not guilty. Looks like Sussman's going to get in big trouble. We'll probably get a behaviour bond, and that's kind of how it all works these days. But it does lead to a much higher scenario now that we are going to see the origins of Russiagate come out into the wide open. Next, we look at the monkeypox story, and we covered this off earlier in the week when Sonia Bailey came on and spoke in great detail about what she's learning, and it is kind of frightening as to what we can expect coming up here with all the new information coming out. And with the Pfizer jab, we've now seen in the 55,000 pages that they have been forced to release, we've now learnt that the monkeypox, well, it turns out it's actually herpes zoster, shingles, is one of the known side effects of the vaccine. So the big argument out there is, are they using one to cover for the other? And of course, the fact checkers are out denying it all, but it's the poor individual person that may be suffering in the long term. So we're just trying to get down to where we actually sit in this entire story here. Are we being led down the garden path, or are we in fact a bunch of crazy nut jobs that are out there just trying to cause as much damage as we can to an establishment that doesn't quite deliver the goods for us anymore? I wrote a story last night about how we need to look at things going off as we look at Davos, where all the world's leaders are turning up in the World Economic Forum in their white aeroplanes, as they do, and telling us all how we need to live our lives. And so here we are in a scenario now whereby in this world today, you have the people who know everything telling the people who know nothing that it's our fault and not their fault, and that they need us to sort out the next round of problems for us. And this is global government launching itself in real time and we sit here just twiddling our thumbs waiting for something to give. Something going to give? Well, maybe it's going to be the next midterms in the US, where the primaries are already taking place now. And there's another story that we will no doubt follow as we continue watching to this election all the way up to November of this year. So you look at Davos, the new global government revealing itself in real time, all to save us from the decisions they made with us, insisting that they do something they tell us we must do, but cannot achieve because we have been convinced by them that it is ourselves, that their incompetence that they used to get us to do is in fact our problem. Does that all make sense? Well, this is what we're up against today in the world. We just are getting beaten up by the authorities that want to control us completely, introduce things like climate change as the ultimate reason why we must vote for them to solve a problem that they can't even solve. Well, now we're getting told that the weather's cooling, but climate change used to be about heating. Climate change used to be about drought, and now it's about floods. So if you're confused, I'm confused. And that means that we're all very, very confused about what's going on, why the election was such a fizzer for the freedom movement, and who better to be able to discuss all of this and more than a professional in the business. And her name is Kate Shouten, and I'm going to introduce her to the audience right now because she is a campaign manager that's been around the game for 20 years and has seen the Liberal Party, the independent parties, and now she's had a good look at the freedom parties, and we're going to dissect where we went right and where we went wrong. Don't go anywhere. You're on TNT Radio.
This is TNT Radio, where you meet the entire menagerie of mankind. And some who haven't yet been cataloged. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the show. Kate Shouten, welcome to TNT Radio on the Jason Q Citizen Show.
Good to be here. Well, happy fun times.
Well, it certainly is. And I tell you what, for someone who has been part of the Liberal Party and part of the other parties, you got introduced to the Freedom Party movement and you're still here. So what did you make of this election of 2022?
Yeah, I think that it has been interesting to see the rise of the self-branded freedom movement and freedom parties. I mean, historically in New South Wales, we've had some long-lasting minor parties. I mean, Reverend Fred Niles has been with us a long time. Pauline Hanson, I'm old enough to remember Pauline Hanson. Inverell Showground, and it was standing room only in the very early 90s with Pauline Hanson, and you know, even people like Bob Brown. So to see what I think was particularly interesting with the self-branded freedom movement was to see the level of cooperation. I don't think I've ever observed such a diverse group of people, and people all signed up and paid up to very different organisations, some with some very different policies, some not so different, but certainly led by very different individuals. I mean, John Ruddock is not Pauline Hanson, and Pauline Hanson is not Clive Palmer, and I don't know if IMOP have got a leader. These are very, very different individuals, the level of cooperation amongst the membership. Which is just not something you see even at times in the Liberal Party and the National Party. You don't see that. I mean, I remember being in Liberal Party HQ back in the day, and somebody who remained nameless said, "The only good gnat's a dead gnat," and I've been forming coalition government with these people for these groups for, you know, the better part of 100 years. Mm. But so I think that was really, really quite interesting to see.
It is a strange concept, isn't it, that when you think that politics is a blood sport, the enemy of your enemy is your friend, and yet people will do horrible things in order to get power. And being someone who actually lived that in the early days in the Labor Party, when I say early days of my political career, around about 2007, when it was my own friends who I used to do work with and pick up rubbish with and hand out with and various other things. And when we decided to both run as pre-selection candidates, it was within 36 hours that I received a phone call from head office telling me that I couldn't do something, that the only way that they could have known it was that this person had made wanted to make trouble for me that I got in the way. And so that's when it was my first reality taste to realize that politics truly is horrible.
Well, I do think that you've touched on something like a really fundamental difference there between some of the smaller parties and versus the Labor Party, Liberal Party, and the National Party. Is if you go into a room or into a function, a branch meeting of one of those three parties, I would say, you know, a good 30% of the room have a political aspiration, like an actual to get their ass in a seat somewhere kind of aspiration, whether that's on a council, whether that's state or federal, they have those aspirations. Whereas what I've observed with minor parties, certainly with One Nation and to another extent, what I've seen from Liberal Democrats and also from the UAP, is it's quite the opposite. If you're at a social in a social setting or you're in a meeting, the vast majority, there's maybe a handful of people there that aspire to a parliamentary seat. The vast majority are there because of a cause or because they're concerned about, legitimately concerned about the country, concerned about the way things are going, concerned about the political system. I don't share all of their concerns, but I think it's very real. And it is a stark and unique difference as to joining a party to join a party versus joining a party as a vehicle toward a seat.
It's a really interesting point because these parties, even though they existed in the past, the Liberal Democrats have been around for quite some time.
About 21 years, I think, the Liberal Democrats have been around.
That's right. And United Australia Party claimed to fame in 2013 when Clive Palmer got himself elected into the lower house there. But really they are a result of activism, and so they weren't really the candidates as such in a traditional sense through a pre-selection process, through a branch structure. And so they did very much come through on more of an appointed process. Mm. So there was no rank and file membership in the same way. So this was the immaturity of these parties. And so what we've noticed, of course, was that there was great common ground, and that's where the freedom idea came from, that was obviously anti-mandate and anti-lockdown and obviously realising that there was an alternate approach to this one-size-fits-all solution that was presented to us. So you make a really interesting a fork in the road point there, and so this may well be the reason why they were unable to be able to get people elected, at least this time and or last time, although we're learning today the very possibility that the UAP may get a senator up in Victoria.
Yeah, I wouldn't write that out, having looked at where they're sitting and how the votes are travelling, and I think no one will really know unless you're physically sitting in the room looking at a few thousand ballot papers. I mean, it's this election by spreadsheet, which I did see one of the minor parties was particularly involved in looking at their preferences and what I would call campaign by spreadsheet. I mean, a how to vote card is only a recommendation. Mm. It is only a recommendation. It really doesn't mean shit. Mm. And people do weird and wonderful things in the ballot box. And until we actually look at a substantial number of papers and see what people did, I don't think that we will truly yet understand the election, because I suspect that people have done weird and wonderful things. Oh, look. And by weird and wonderful, I mean they voted for their local lower house LNP candidate or their local Liberal candidate, and then they voted for the Hemp Party. Mm. I mean, hats off to those guys. Help End Marijuana Prohibition. Like, best name ever. Best name since the Sex Party, and I don't know why they changed that to the Reason Party. I mean, Sex Party, best name ever. Can you imagine, Jason? I always wanted to campaign manage for those guys. Just go into electorate, go door-to-door to voters and say, hi, I'm here campaigning for so-and-so and their platform is to get you more sex. I've never met anyone that doesn't want more sex. Sex Party, best platform ever, easiest sell. They did themselves out of that one. Went to the Reason Party.
Perfect, perfect answer. Interestingly, the Hemp Party with that great name did manage to change their name to the Legalized Cannabis Party, but they have got what I believe is their best result ever in Queensland. They got 0.44 of a quota.
They've done double here in New South Wales. They've done double what the LDP did. Now, the LDP stood 33 candidates. Massive undertaking for them. I mean, massive and hats off to them to get 33 sets of nominations in, to have 33 candidates and not have any of them stuff up. You know, not to have to disendorse anybody, not to have a racist or offensive tweet amongst them. Like, yes. It's nigh on impossible not to have an offensive tweet in your campaign unit. So, I mean, because everybody's offended by something, and offense is so subjective. So when I say an offensive tweet, hats off to Lib Dems for getting that off and rolling. But And they went out and manned the booths to the best of their ability, and they had candidates, and certainly up here we saw them manning pre-polls and things. Didn't see a marijuana person, and drugs aren't my thing. I'm not for legalization. I'm never going to support legalization of marijuana. Just personally, just I have concerns about the mental health impacts. However, you know, marijuana is big in the Hunter. It's still the 80s up here, you know. Pot is still a big thing. Did not man a single booth. And you would have thought if they were going to put boots on the ground, this is one of the locations they may have done it in. Didn't put a single pair of boots on the ground. LDP, 33 candidates. Lib Dems, 33 candidates in the field. The pot guys have done them 2-1.
They absolutely did. And this is something that they continue to do when they turn up at election time. But it's saying more now that that the industry is not just about recreational, but it's about medicinal, industrial, et cetera. And so it itself is also maturing. But you're probably watching the idea here that you've got people that may be getting into this movement very young, even underage, supporting it, watching it, whatever. And now that they're going on and this lifestyle is expanding, that you are seeing lifers here, people from the 80s now 40 years later.
I'm wondering if it is that. I mean, I'm also wondering if, quite frankly, people just know what the hemp party stands for. It's not that we're going to say one thing tomorrow and or say it in weasel words or flip-flop based on who's in the party room down the track. Legalization of marijuana, that's it. That's what they want. They're just there. And I'm wondering if to some extent it is a reflection of the cynicism that is in the electorate. I think that the freedom movement to some extent is born by quite a bit of cynicism. It's been really confronting to me as somebody who's worked in it my whole life and somebody who really believes government is a force, can be a force for good, to see this percentage or volume of my fellow citizens that are just so skeptical of government and of the people in government. And so I'm wondering to some extent with the hemp guys if it's just that their message is clear and that resonates.
Well, the interesting part of it was that we actually had Dr. Andrew Catalaris, who ended up running for the Senate for the Cannabis Party in Canberra. We had him to a couple of Friends of Freedom events. And the one thing he did say is that we're not a single issue party, and yet it may well be the single issue was the all the important thing. It's almost as if when you look at my party, the United Australia Party, they had so many policies that it was almost too much for people to be able to comprehend or accept or even understand.
It's politics, I mean, I think even slightly before Trump, but if we look at it in a very Australian context, you know, you've got players like Mark Latham who could be tweeting about anything from transgender women to married at first sight. And some of these players in recent years, politics is now being consumed almost like entertainment. So when you're talking about getting your political message, you're getting your message across in the community, you're not just competing with your political opponents. You are also competing with things like married at first sight. You're trying to get over this volume of noise and over the entertainment. I do think that that the UAP did dish up a pretty big pie that they were trying to serve to an electorate that most of the time struggles just to consume the nuggets.
Mm. Yeah, look, it's such an interesting point. And then when you look at Liberal Dems, the same thing. They have their 10-point manifesto.
Manifesto. I mean, it is called the Freedom Manifesto.
Which almost seems oxymoron.
Yeah.
In that sense too. But I guess the main part of what we're getting to here is that the fact that there was such a smorgasbord of freedom parties and all of them with different ideas, many people would come up and say to me, look, you all need to get together. And I used to believe the same thing too. And unfortunately, there was no possible way that you could get these parties to merge in advance despite sort of initial steps to do so. There was just too many competing ideas and therefore too many egos, but these things had to play out in real time.
And too many people at the top. I mean, it's there are some big dogs there.
Yeah.
You know, Palmer, John Hanson, Latham, Ruddox, No Shrinking, Philip John Ruddock's No Shrinking Violet either. Campbell, you're talking Newman. About Campbell Newman, Ross Cameron with the LDP. You know, there's a lot of big dogs there. You're trying to put a lot of big dogs in one kennel.
Could
be brilliant or could be ugly.
Well, this is the point. See, one of the things that I wanted to do in this within the freedom movement was the idea of creating a structure and almost building an alternate cabinet. And and Clive and Craig for the UAP decided to work on a minimalization of that, which was pretty much, there was only four of them. Craig was the leader, Clive was the shadow treasurer, Dominic Martino was the shadow finance minister, and then the fellow up in Townsville was the shadow minister for Northern Queensland, which was kind of neither here nor there in the scheme of things, but it was just such a vast area that
plays well in Queensland, though.
But that's right, and it's also a vast area and needs that extra support. But if you're really looking at it as a freedom movement in total, and this is something we might talk about in the next segment, and this is purely just, you know, playing fantasy politics, but you could almost build a shadow cabinet with some of those big personalities and represent that in the future. And that's part of the fun of it.
You could build it, whether it'd hold, I think, is quite another question, but you could build it.
And there's the point. But I think this is the big lesson to you at home that's listening here today, is that part of the great part of having Kate with us today is that she has seen this in the establishment movement over many, many years. And for us who want to see this freedom movement come and join as a big force in the future, it makes a whole lot more sense that we can see it from the structure of the reality of how this actually plays out. Doesn't matter how good you are, doesn't matter what you do, you go out there, and we did all the things right, such as manning booths, such as having signs out, such as attending rallies, of being seen.
Your forums, I mean, I think you guys put on something quite phenomenal, like about 8 essentially minor party candidate forums up here in the Hunter, which is something I haven't seen before. And I think it's something that was very healthy for democracy. And when we compare that to, whilst they do some good programming, shame on the ABC for the stunts they pulled in places like Riverina, where there was 10 candidates on the ballot. They organised a forum and they invited 3.
Yes.
And shame on them for doing that.
Absolutely, and this is the problem that we all have with this, and no wonder the freedom movement is crying for the defunding of the ABC. But this is my problem, Kate, is that you can't have compulsory voting, a station that's for the people that doesn't let the people speak, and you don't teach politics in school.
And I believe they did it up in Page as well. I think you had Tom Searles on from the Liberal Democrats a few weeks ago, and I think a similar thing happened at the ABC, where initially they invited all the candidates, then they uninvited everyone except the National, the Labor and the Greens. And I just think that's outrageous. You know, it should be a contest of ideas. You know, even if you think somebody's ideas are silly, that's part of the pluralism of our society. That's what separates us from authoritarian states and communist countries, is more than one idea. And shame on them for not letting everyone be heard.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to delve a little bit deeper into some of these new ideas and fresh ideas, where we're literally cross-pollinating between establishment and anti-establishment as we look forward to what the freedom movement may evolve into as it prepares for where it should go next. Don't go anywhere. You're on TNT Radio.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Affordable housing. We can build that. Sustainable housing. We can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit savebythescan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. Savebythescan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Where progress is influenced by revolution and evolution. This is today's News Talk Radio. TNT. TNT.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. On the show today, Kate Shouten, an experienced campaign manager who's been around a Liberal Party through the One Nation Party to the Freedom Movement, and what she doesn't know is not worth knowing. And so we're going to have a bit of fun in this segment, I think, which we don't normally wait till the last segment, Kate. Speculating on possibility. I like to speculate here, and I brought it up in the last segment. The idea, if you were actually going to bring the freedom movements under one umbrella, how could you possibly structure it in a way that would – well, here's the point. In my campaign that only got less than 4% vote, there was no way that my competitors thought I was going to get 4% because they were really running scared and seemed to be threatened one way or another. And it wasn't like we were intimidating. It was the most transparent, honest campaign I possibly could have run. But it was the way that we were able to discuss ideas and compete on those things. And they really thought along the way, this guy's not as bad as we thought.
Oh, and that always happens. And that's sad. I mean, it's something that, I mean, I outgrew years and years and years ago this idea that that there's no humanity and that you can't possibly have a conversation with somebody. And I talked to some of the younger ones in the Young Liberals and Young Labor and even the Young Greens up here, and I say, listen, you have to learn early. It will serve you well to learn how to talk to people and to have those friendships and have those relationships. I mean, there's a beautiful bar in state parliament that used to be for the MPs, and it hasn't been open for probably two decades. They will not go in there and sit in there and have a drink with each other. And I think that's very representative of how toxic it can get. Where, you know, I mean, can you imagine seeing people every few weeks and you can't even say, how's your partner or how are your kids or how are you going? Like, it's just madness. It's absolute madness. And as you touched on before, there's more that unites us than divides us. And if you look at the political community here in Maitland, where there's a diversity of ideas, but we all deeply care about mental health. We all deeply care about youth mental health. We all deeply care about reducing domestic violence. We all deeply care about our seniors having a reasonable retirement and living safely and free from abuse and free from poverty. Like, there is far more that unites us than divides us.
Well, absolutely it is. And it's not just that, is it? Because economically, no one wants to see anyone lose a home. No one wants to see anyone lose their job. And so we do want to be able to work together in this regard. What we don't like, of course, is that when we ignore things that mean things to people, and this is the idea of the freedom movement, is that these were the people that decided for whatever reason they didn't want to take this vaccine, but they were the first people in their lifetimes that were actively and openly discriminated against under the guise of risk management or safety. And this is the part that people can't accept and needed to be able to know that, you know, your medical history used to be private. It still is protected by privacy, but somehow it wasn't. And so this is why these people emerged in what seemed to be great numbers, although at the electorate at the election they weren't as big as we thought they would be.
Well, I think, you know, 700,000 or so, I think, was one of the figures I saw for New South Wales. I mean, that's not an insignificant percentage of voters. If we're going to translate that into something like quota in the New South Wales Legislative Council, then it's a far more significant number if we're looking at it through that framework. Whether these groups can keep themselves together as individually, first and foremost, and then whether or not they can keep the movement together, I was... I don't know if impressed is the right word, but I suppose impressed and to some extent astounded to see the level of cooperation in the How to Vote cuts. Now, again, whether the electorate have followed those, I'm not sure, but for that to even have occurred the way it did, and when we're factoring in the personalities and the big dogs, and some of those people have got long-held beefs with each other and et cetera, but to see all that put aside and to see a very consistent, very deliberate cross-preference recommendation, very unusual. I didn't ever think I'd see, particularly between Palmer and Hanson, I didn't think I'd ever see
that level
a cause come first.
Yeah, well, I guess that was one of the best parts of it. But interestingly, when we looked at the Paterson election results, we thought that the way that it had been divided amongst the seven candidates, that Labor and the Greens were literally on one side of the fence and the Liberals and the four Freedom parties were on the other. And that's kind of how the preferencing worked on paper. But when you looked at the actual results, whether they've been counted or not, the Labor Party got a whole lot more. And that was probably reflected by the fact that 50% of people walking in the gate did not take a how-to-vote card.
Oh, look, people don't rush to the polls to re-elect a government. And I think that, you know, it started out quite relaxed at the pre-poll. And as things went on, I know when I went to vote on election day, just the feeling around me from fellow voters was almost white hot, just seething, absolutely seething with the government for whatever reason. I think there was a raft of reasons, but it wasn't just, you know, oh, hey ho, they've had 10 years, let's give someone else a go. The feeling I had was it was quite seething. And I think it is a very, very one of the telltale signs when you've been it for a while is when people won't take any how to vote material. They've made their mind up.
Yeah.
And they were determined, and they were coming in determined with their minds made up.
And they certainly were, weren't they? They were walking in at speed. No thanks, I'm right. And in they went. The freedom movement, look, as you said, you know, multiple parties, multiple personalities. Given what you've observed so far, is there anyone that you can identify that if they were to consolidate would be leadership material?
To lead
a one freedom party, for example. I mean, the problem we have here, of course, is that you do have the Clive Palmers, the Campbell Newmans, the Pauline Hansons. That's three separate parties right there.
I mean, I suppose if we were looking just, you know, in terms of New South Wales, he wouldn't want the job. I can't imagine he would want the job. But the Honourable Rod Roberts is an extremely steady pair of hands, a retired police detective sergeant. Couldn't lie crooked in bed, kind of thing. I don't think he'd want it, but he certainly is built for that sort of leadership. I mean, Ross Cameron isn't made out of candy glass. Ross Cameron was a BFG, and you don't suddenly lose all those skills. Whether he would want to do that and play that kind of role, I have no idea. Certainly, in theory, should know a thing or two about party leadership and Conservative Party leadership. But then you've got members. You've got very different members there. You've got a real grouping of sort of policy wonks in the Lib Dems. You've got real sort of mum and dad types in the UAP, and then over in One Nation is quite an eclectic. I've met farmers in One Nation. I've met retirees, and two very different groupings there. There's Mark Latham people, and there's people that have been since 96. You know, it's a very different. I mean, be a fascinating barbecue to attend. I mean, I'd love to go. I'd love to check it out.
It's truly extraordinary, isn't it? Because in the United States, the anti-establishment candidates were, at the time, they were Bernie Sanders, who was an independent that sided with the Democrats, and there was Donald Trump, who was nowhere, who became the leader of the Republican Party by winning a primary over 17 people. So he decided to literally hijack an establishment party and get to the very top in that election process, which can't happen here in this process because you don't get to be the leader of Labor or Liberal by being an outsider Freedom Party and going through a primary process. So they literally have to set up a third party. So it's an extremely different approach, but it's something that our listeners will be thinking, wow, that is something that I've never really thought of if you really were going to consolidate. Now, the other elephant in the room, of course, is the one guy that the Freedom Party thought was going to be their leader was the guy from Australia One that's not actually a party, was Ricardo Bossi. And so that throws another spanner in the works, but it also shows that there was no unity from Bossi.
I think we have to remember that you and I are political participants and observers, but we do not enjoy parliamentary privilege, so we need to be very careful as to what we say. But I seriously think when you've been talking the talk for as long as Bossie has and you can't get your shit together to get your party actually registered, are you either not serious or are you frighteningly incompetent?
Yeah, it's a fair question, isn't it? And that's something that I guess that people will be thinking about as they do their navel gazing over the next, whether it be months or years, whether we move towards the next election. And that's the frightening part because many people when you have a massive defeat, there's this idea of getting back into it as quickly as possible. It's like the guy that that plays in the US Open and he wins it and he's out the next day and he's out there hitting golf balls again, getting ready for
look,
it.
Look, I think coming back to Bosie, like Ricardo Bosie, well, you know, maybe this is the time the Freedom Movement acknowledge him as their leader, because under the Westminster tradition, if a leader presides over a result such as has been had, they sack him. There so maybe this is the time to recognize him as the leader and then can his ass.
There you go. So there's a different way of looking at it, which is absolutely beautiful. But it shows you, though, how many people have emerged in this same cycle, right? Mm. I mean, you've got 151 UAP candidates. Technically, you've got 151 One Nation candidates, although it looked like about half of them or less were not necessarily genuine. And what I mean by that is the idea of what we call a paper candidate. Mm. And if you get endorsed so late in a campaign, you can't actually go and make the same traction.
I was surprised that wasn't a bigger story. I think that they've pulled that stunt, quote unquote, a few times, and the mainstream media just can't be bothered breathe any air into it anymore. But I mean, as you know, having been a candidate, it is publicly available, the candidate's information, like their name, who they're standing for, and what suburb they reside in. And so it's very publicly available. They had candidates in New South Wales that resided in Tasmania. They had candidates in Tasmania that resided in Queensland. Like, it's taking the piss. Mm. It really is taking the piss.
Do you think that that's the reason why their vote kind of dropped somewhat, or is that because there was more Freedom parties to choose from?
I would say there's more Freedom parties to choose from, and everything runs its course over time. Mm. I mean, Sandy Hansen has been there since 96 in different waves, and I give her some credit that she's survived. Like, as a woman, she's survived the cut and thrust of it. She's for better or worse, she's survived it. But you know, very much a product of 96, maybe not so viable now.
Yeah, look, it's a long time, isn't it, in politics? In 96, if you're adding that's 26 years. That's the same time Albanese got elected. He's been in the game for 26 years, and he's finally somehow stumbled over the line.
But he's part of it. He's part of a brand and part of a core set of values. Like, the union movement goes back far longer than the Labor Party. Mm. When you've got all that underpinning, and that is something that can modernise, I suppose, or move with the times. I mean, the union movement, the Builders Labourers Federation. Remember the Builders Labourers Federation and Green Band Parks and taking a stand and stopping construction at Sydney University when they refused to allow openly gay students into teaching and nursing. I mean, that is something that has moved with social causes, I suppose, whereas One Nation hasn't moved. They're still about largely the same stuff they were always about. Mm. So I think
that's an interesting point, because technically, to me, given in my own electorate, it felt like the One Nation vote, for better or worse, was the protest vote, whereas the UAP was just this yellow party. Mm. Whereas I noticed that they certainly dropped a lot in our electorate by about 6% compared to last time, but it also meant that they were also top of the ballot, which may or may not have been an issue or not. But I noticed that they tended to get around that 8% mark,
and a significantly large portion of their voters, their preferences, go back to the Labor Party, regardless of what's on their how to vote material. Mm. And you see that all over the Hunter, and you see that in quite a few places. And I think to some extent, when you drill down that with One Nation, there are an element of that traditional trade union movement that don't like what they see as cheaper labour, and don't like, immigrants taking our jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And that plays very much into the One Nation mentality, number one. And number two, if you're rusted on, you know, we're talking about places, we're just down the road from Cessnock. In Cessnock, you get your bloody union card and your ALP membership before they give you your birth certificate. I mean, they give you the two important documents first. Those people are never, ever going to vote Liberal. Mm. Never or late or nat. They're not. So if they've got the shits with the Labor Party, where are they going to go?
Yeah.
Because they're never going to go Liberal or Coalition. So, well, Pauline stands up for us, likes coal, tells it how it is.
Yep.
Jobs for blokes.
Yep. And there it is. But you know the funny thing about it, if we just circle around here in the Hunter Valley in the coal mining town, how did the Greens get such a high vote, almost 8%?
Women. Women are swinging voters. Men are far more likely to stand behind the government of the day.
Yep.
Women are traditionally swinging voters, and my suspicion is it's a demographic of women that for whom economic policy is not particularly relevant. You know, they're retired or they're self-funded retirees and they own the home. So all of that economic stuff doesn't really apply. The job security stuff doesn't really apply. They're thinking about the world that their grandchildren are going to grow up in, and you will not mess with the grandchildren.
Mm.
You will not mess with the grandchildren. And so that climate change message becomes very appealing. More appealing potentially than Anthony Albanese, certainly more appealing than Bill Shorten was.
Yeah. And so that would explain why they get a representation of 8%. Parties attracted 12% in the electorate, and then you're looking at the balance, which was made up of the traditional parties. So it was more of an 80-20 rather than a 70-30 split.
Oh, if we went back to the days when only white men voted, the Freedom parties would be kicking ass.
Mm.
I mean, it's a more male-driven voting block than it is female, and you can see that on the ground in the booths. You can see them coming up. It's the blokes that will take the cards and don't care about taking them. That, you know, do feel that, you know, the world was better when fat, belligerent white men like Churchill ran it. And I mean, he's not Churchill, but to a large extent, Clive Palmer is a fat, belligerent white man.
Yeah, but unfortunately, he didn't quite get the vote that he needed in order to get into office. So there is certainly a change there, isn't there? It's a big change.
But if only men voted, the Labor Party would never win another election.
Well, there
it's
you go.
True.
Yeah.
I'm not recommending. I'm not offering to hand my suffrage back. I mean, as much as I'm not a fan of the Labor Party, I still want to vote. But I maintain if only men, particularly white men, were voting, the Labor Party would never win another election.
So
certainly the Greens wouldn't. Most certainly wouldn't win another election.
they probably never would again. And yet here they are, and they've won government, and you've got Teal independence, and you've got Greens in the balance of power in the Senate. What can we talk about in terms of where we expect that's going to go? And we might have to save that for the next segment. When we come back, we'll delve into that a little bit more about what we can expect in the next term of government, given that your expertise is on the blue side of things and not necessarily the red or the watermelon side. But we will take that break now, and when we come back, we're going to delve into what to expect over the next 3 years. But don't go anywhere. You're on TNT Radio.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. World Economic Forum President Klaus Schwab has said the future is built by the elites at Davos.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Let's also be clear, the future is not just happening. The future is built by us, by a powerful community as you here in this room. We have the means to improve the states of the world.
Yes, that's right. Klaus Schwab announcing to the world that he has the means to improve the world and that they are in charge of your life. Did anyone vote for Klaus Schwab? This is all part of the Great Reset. You will owe nothing and you will be happy. All your food will be delivered by drones. You will not eat meat. You'll have no privacy, but you'll like it. Welcome to Serfdom 2022. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Mums, dads, and grandparents, did you know that each year close to 1,000 Australian and New Zealand children experience a burn injury that requires treatment at a specialist burns unit? 79% of these burns happen in the home, and all of them can be prevented. June is KidSafe's National Burns Awareness Month, as there's a significant increased risk of burns during the winter. Visit kidsafe.com.au to download the free burn safety checklist and get some essential tips for keeping kids safe in your home.
When you listen to us, you're always guaranteed straightforward, easy-to-understand, coherent conversation.
So I've made it a priority my entire career to work closely with you from the time I got to the Senate 180 years ago.
And we stand by those words.
But I made very clear to Putin that we're not going to seek excuse me. So the best way to get something done, if it holds near and dear to you, that you like to be able to... Anyway.
Oh, man. Just stop talking.
TNT.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. I'm with Kate Shouten, who is a campaign manager with many, many years' experience. And just listening to Joe Biden there in the break, I thought it's appropriate now to change tack for just a minute. Who's the worst president you've ever seen?
US president?
Yeah.
God, in my lifetime.
I thought there couldn't be anyone worse than George W. Bush, but I think we have a new contender.
Yeah, I think we do. I just look, Bush had an amazing memory. I mean, he had that real factor of if you don't like him, if you think you don't like him, don't meet him. You know, he had that quality, great at a barbecue, knew everybody's name, remembered things. I mean, that image of him being told about the World Trade Center, like that's a lingering and just not knowing what to do for 5 or 10 minutes is kind of a lingering memory. I mean, I think we expect more of the leader of the free world, though, if we're fair, how else would you have reacted? But Biden, I mean, it's just bungle after bungle. It really is a bit scary.
It certainly is. And then when you see what it is, you start to get a bit nervous. It's a bit like the days of George H.W. Bush when Dan Quayle was the VP. And when George H.W. Bush would have to go in a hospital, everyone was praying that he was okay.
Dan Quayle had crisp white shirts, you know, factor. I mean, I think women like Dan Quayle. You're a bit hard on the dancer there.
Well, yeah, that's, I suppose, if you can't spell, what was it, potato? It was a bit of a concern at the time. Isn't it funny the things that you remember? But we've certainly seen all types running for office and getting elected. And that's the thing that's funny about this is it's certainly not about the best person for the job. It's about the best person who gets into the right position at the exact right time.
Australian Parliament, it's the only job in the world that requires absolutely no training. There are no prerequisites. I mean, in recent years we've seen everything from a blacksmith, not that there's anything wrong with that, Ricky Muir. Remember Ricky Muir? Yeah. The guy that was used to do bloody FaceTime videos with cow shit on his face and just kept talking. Like, I mean, it was, did you not know? Did you not care?
Wasn't he the car guy?
Yeah,
the motoring group or something.
The motoring group. I mean, there's no prerequisite. I mean, sitting there now, there's a lot of lawyers.
There's always a lot of lawyers.
There's a couple of, I don't know how many is still around now, but Senator Williams, Wacker Williams from the Nats was a shearer. I think the Labor Party have got their upper house MPs in New South Wales was a shearer. I mean, there's a few farmers, there's a few, but, you know, there's a hell of a lot of lawyers.
And this
not nearly enough former teachers. Wouldn't it be lovely in New South Wales to have a Minister for Education that had actually spent some time in a classroom?
Well, that would certainly help, wouldn't it? It makes a big difference, doesn't it? And that's the problem. And I guess the same thing applies when you're dealing in defence and health. And I guess what we're asking for is can we just limit the globalists, please, those that have come out of Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum training group, because it just seems like it's all too much and too concentrated now that we're literally being led down the globalist pathway and still no one wants to acknowledge it. And I find that frightening.
Yes, well, you and I have had these arguments. I don't know if not arguments, but heated discussions. I'm not sure if your listeners want to get into that. But I think though there was some room to pause and reflect on how it's all been managed. I don't believe that if Chris Minns was Premier or had Albanese been Prime Minister, that much would have been handled differently. They still would have been presented with the same information or very similar information, and I think probably the same recommendations would have been made. Whether those were the right recommendations, I think for peace of mind, I think there is a lot of angst in the community. I think there's a lot of anger in the community. I think sunlight is the best disinfectant. I don't think a royal commission is the appropriate forum, and I've talked to you about that before. If we really want to have a process that the public feel confident in, well, you don't make that process something that the people being investigated appoint the investigator and provide the funds. So I think a parliamentary inquiry is the more appropriate response. If things are found that could have been done better or should have been done better or weren't done competently, so be it. We face the outcome of that. If there's nothing to find, then there's nothing to find. But I think there does need to be, for the peace of mind of the electorate, an inquiry into some form through the parliament, the timeline by which decisions were made, who was providing the advice, what the origin of the advice was, and why one course of action was taken over another.
And that's something that I think everyone wants to get down to, but also to the position whereby that we have choices in the future, this idea of a mono idea or one-size-fits-all solution that suits no one at all has got to be looked at in another way, so that next time up that we can certainly fight it in a different process. I guess we're all looking at the monkeypox that many of us thought was a joke at the beginning, but it's apparently not.
Well, I did. I thought, I told you that. I said, is this a real thing? Because I started on election day, I started seeing all these memes on Facebook of monkeys, and you know, when are we going to see, you know, no hanky panky with monkey laws and things. And I thought this is a joke. I thought somebody's just thought, oh, wouldn't it be funny if there was such a thing as monkeypox? Like I literally thought it was, you know, almost like in the vein of, remember there was all the Pepe the Frog and all the salty teas. I thought it was a joke. I mean, monkeypox, talk about bad, poor branding, like worst name ever. I don't know. I got nothing on that one.
Well, I guess the scary part is that when you look at the hidden side effects here that they didn't want to release, and you realise that it's one of them is shingles, herpes zoster, and that monkeypox resembles it, to the point where you're seeing memes on Facebook that they have pictures that describe both of them, monkeypox and shingles, and they're identical. So Facebook fact checkers have to get out there and try and bring that argument down. But the point is, something's out there that's landed on our plates. Bill Gates is, of course, alerted to this 3 years ago. And so the people that are out there wearing their tin foil, what did I call it, their prophecy headdresses, are out there going, see, I told you so again, and where to next?
Well, I really regret not having invested in tin foil, because I think had I invested in it like 10 years ago, I could retire by now. Like tin foil, the future is in, forget cryptocurrency, the future is in tin foil, my friend.
Well, I think so. And as soon as Fashion Weeks has a tin foil hat, you'll know that we've made it. And when Big W sells it, you know that we're going to win. And so that's how close we are to the end. But I guess we've only got a couple of minutes left, Kate, and I just thought, where do you think we go now in maybe in the first year of an Albanese government, if it's a reaction to what's going on? What can we expect that they will try and put out there in the next 12 months?
I don't think it's an enviable situation with the rise of these teal independents, regardless of what their politics are. There are some big personalities in the parliament. I mean, Bob Catt has been an independent for quite a long time, but he understands the process and he had a background. Like some of these people have just, I mean, they might be eminently qualified in their private lives, but coming in, they're going to think they're all BFGs because they won their seat. Well, once you get down to Canberra and find out that you are a very small fish in a very, very big pond, and it's very much like chutes and ladders. None of these people are going to walk in there and be chairing the defence committee. Like, oh, but I won my seat. Congrats. You're the most junior person in the room. You're going on the chook committee. Like, if we're going to have an inquiry into eggs, you're on the chook committee. Go and sit there, do your time, learn how the process works, learn about a bit of conciliation, learn about, I mean, I think some of the personalities, some of the speeches that were given on election night, some of them were excellent. Some of them I thought were revolting, were entitled and revolting. And it's not an enviable situation for Prime Minister Albanese to have that in his backyard. It's probably in the country's interest that he has a majority in his own right. It probably for reasons of stability, because I don't think being beholden to some of those personalities would be a terribly good thing for the country. I think it would be a terrible thing. He's going to have enough with the Greens upstairs in the Senate, let alone some of these individuals downstairs that, yeah.
So that's very, very interesting how that perspective is going to play out, and we'll see what Albo's got coming. Now, what happens in terms of economics? You've already got Jim Chalmers, the Treasurer, backing away from some of their promises. That was already, you know, the writing was on the wall, and here they come. How are they going to fare with rising inflation and rising interest rates?
Look, I mean, it's from a purely ideological point of view, I do think that Prime Minister Albanese is going to do the best that he can. I think his intentions are to serve the country in the way that he thinks is best for the country. But, I mean, Jason, we've seen this before, even in my lifetime. The Labor Party come in, big taxing, big spending. It's like having a rental property with nightmare tenants that spend 6 years trashing the place, and the coalition will come back in 6 years and we'll have to repaint and recarpet and hope we still have a fence down the side of the property. You know, this is what happens. They trash the place and we have to come back and we have to clean it up. The adults have to clean it up.
Do you think they've got 6 years in them?
I would be surprised if, I mean, well, I mean, former Prime Minister Abbott almost unseated a government in one term. I don't know. I think it's too soon. I think it's too soon to tell. I think the Labor Party did a good thing for themselves by reforming their process, so we don't have the, you know, we're looking at the end of the single-use plastic bag. Well, thank God we've seen this end of the single-use Prime Minister.
Yeah.
I think for the good of the country.
There you go. We've had a whole lot of Prime Ministers, haven't we, since John Howard lost office Ridiculous. 15 years ago. It's absolutely a completely different game. We've reached the end of the show, Kate. It's been terrific to have you here to get a fresh perspective and take on the freedom movement and the establishment in the same election.
It's always fun.
It's been terrific.
Never a dull moment when we get together.
there certainly isn't, and it is great fun, and I encourage you all to stay listening. We've got Rick Munn coming up next, and that will be a ripper of a show from the other side of the planet. Don't go anywhere. You're on TNT Radio.